Hi, welcome to the Writer's Source Podcast, hosted by Ufoma and Faith. The Writer's Source Podcast is a platform for writers and lovers of the writing industry in Nigeria and Africa as a whole. Do sit back and enjoy this episode.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of the Writer's Source Podcast. With us today is another seasoned writer. We have Miracle Emeka Unkwo. Miracle is the author of the book we're going to be discussing today, What Happened to Janet Uzo, and it is her debut novel. And Miracle was born and raised in Garden City, Port Harcourt. She's a graduate of biochemistry from the University of Nigeria, Nsukka, and has always likened herself to an overflowing drum of creativity. When she isn't sketching designs, drafting patterns, and bent over a sewing machine, her nose is buried in the pages of a good book. So I'll just give a little intro to how I met Miracle. Welcome, Miracle. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So last year at Akare Festival, I met Miracle. She was one of the speakers, one of the guests. And I got an autographed copy of this book. So thank you, Miracle, because I'm holding my autographed copy right now. And I told her that we needed to have her on the podcast because it was important that we had someone like her who was writing, you know, young adult fiction, and not just any kind of young adult fiction. She was writing crime thriller. And this book is a whodunit kind of book. So in today's world, or let me not say today's world, generally when people ascribe African literature to, you know, literary fiction like Wole Soyinka or Larotimi, you know, something that is about social justice or something that is trying to create, teach a lesson, you know, that kind of stuff, and the kind of books we read growing up. Beautiful books, of course. But now we are exploring and we're seeing other forms of writing. We're seeing Afrofuturism, we're seeing science fiction, we're seeing crime thrillers, like what Miracle has done, or what someone like Oyinka Brightwaite has also done. So it was important that we sat with Miracle and, you know, go through her mind and see how she came about this book. So before we dive right into the episode and Faith takes over, I'm just going to give a little insight to what this book is about. So I already said it's a crime thriller, and it follows the life of four friends, but we have two main protagonists who are Pamela and Ibiri, and then two of their friends. I think Eche and they have one other friend. And so Eche is an on and off boyfriend of one of these girls. And then the two best friends, Pamela and Ibiri, had another best friend, who is Janet Uzo, who died in a drowning incident in school. And it was so weird because Janet used to be like one of the best swimmers that they know. So all of a sudden she dies in a drowning incident. And a crazy thing happens at their secondary school, Afobiri Secondary School, where every year a student dies under suspicious circumstances. So while the friends are trying to cope and move on, Ibere is of the opinion that something fishy is happening and wants to get to the root of the matter. So they are teenagers, but, you know, they are plunged into this adult kind of life that they have to fix the problem which the police would not fix. And in the end, they find the killer, of course, in as whodunits, it's someone you would not expect. But we're not going to tell you because you have to read the book. So, you know, go to any bookshop around you, order online, and get yourself a copy of What Happened to Janet Uzo.
Yes, we don't give spoilers here, just saying.
Yes.
Miracle, it is such a pleasure to have you here. And I'm a crime series fan. I love crime. I love crime thrillers. I love reading them or watching them. So it was when Foma told me about meeting you at Akare Festival, I just knew that this episode was just going to be it for me. So What Happened to Janet Uzo has a very, very catchy title. In fact, from when you pick it, you are interested. You want to know what happened. Who is Janet Uzo? Okay, what did they say happened to her? And this is also a journey that we see more often in film than we see in books. And even when we see it in books, it is often adult fiction. So why did you choose this story, a whodunit, for a young adult fiction? Why YA? And why did you choose the story?
Okay, why YA, and why did I choose the story? All right, First of all, for the sake of background information that is very important, I wrote this book when I was a young adult myself, when I was 15 years. And I wrote it because I wanted to read a story like that set in Nigeria. Now, growing up, I loved R.L. Stine. I loved Stephen King. I mean, I got to read about deception, murder, and all of that. And it was westernized. It was abroad. Whenever I wanted to read Nigeria, I found Nigerians' books boring because I wanted something like this. I wanted to have to get my mind to work. I wanted to be a detective with the detective in the book. And there was nothing like that. I checked for that. Our school library was stocked with R.L. Stine novels, and it was perfect for me. But I wanted something that reflected me. I wanted a book where I would see myself. I mean, it's good and fine seeing people called John, Joseph, and all being murdered, but I wanted to see some maybe Shola being murdered. I wanted to see Ikechukwu as a serial killer, and like I just wanted to see, an element of Nigerianness in the books I was reading, and it felt nothing existed. I think this is where Toni Morrison's quote about if there's a book you want to read and it hasn't been written, you write it. And so then I was already writing, and so I started writing. I started writing mystery novels then. And mind you, forget how I'm saying I wanted to see Ikechukwu and Shola. Then, because of this whole mindset we had as children that there was nothing cool or beautiful about being Nigerian. I mean, we admired the Westerners a lot. So even my characters were not, I named them Dylan, Sandra, Sharon, Judy, and all the names we know. So, like I said, I wrote this book when I was young. And so the more I grew, the more the book grew with me. And so when I eventually grew to a certain point, I wanted to make it more local. By then, I had gotten to know who I really am, like my identity as a Nigerian, as an Igbo girl, and I loved every bit of it, and I wanted it to show in my books. I wanted to use my book as a way of exploring. Like Miracle, remember the issue was you actually didn't see any Nigerian book, and now you have a chance to write, and you're still using the same Western characters. And so I did a rewrite where I changed most of the characters, infused them with, because obviously if we're in River State, we need to have some Calabari characters and so I just did all of that. It was like that was basically it. So that's why I didn't choose YA. I'd say YA chose me, as cliche as it sounds. That was just it just felt so natural to me at that point. And seeing that when the book came out and I saw how everybody really appreciated the fact that young adults finally can have a book like this to read, I just knew I had started on a path that I did not want to go away from. So that's it basically.
You know,
That's awesome.
the funny thing is her story. Her story about how she wrote foreign names reminded me of this time Chimamanda had an interview where she said something about how the first book that she wrote were just so westernized. They just had all these characters, and that thank God it wasn't published because she hid that manuscript now, and that manuscript will never see the light of day. But it just makes me appreciate the authenticity. I think that is one thing we've heard from our guests so far. They are very true
Yes.
to their writings, to their roots. So it's just really nice because in the book we see Port Harcourt, you know, the whole it's just where we are seeing a crime set in Port Harcourt, you know, people with this authentic Nigerian names, authentic Nigerian vibes. Thank you so much for that, Miracle. Thank you for staying authentic to your story.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, and I must add that she actually reminded me of when we spoke with Nicole Asinugo, the screenwriter, and when she was speaking about when she first started writing for Nollywood, she had a lot of influence from, you know, from westernized books that she, from foreign books that she had read, and you know, westernized experiences. And she was naming characters just like what Miracle said, English names. She was writing detective like they were English people, but she had to learn that you have to stay, like what you said, stay true to your roots. And that was a very important part of her journey to writing, and a very important part for any Nigerian writer. So I'm really glad. And then you said something that struck me that made me say that was awesome in the first place. You said you wrote this book when you were 15. And when I picked up the book, there was one thing I liked about it. It's a book you can finish in one sitting. But someone like me, I've become a very slow reader. So it took me quite a while to finish it. But this is a book you pick up and you finish in one sitting. And it's very easy. It's very simple. The writing is so simple and the story is captivating. So I see that at the time you, so, but for someone that's, for you to have picked up this story or to have imagined this story at 15, I would say that's very impressive. And I really liked that you were able to just come up with something this creative and you just, so like you said, you wanted something that was setting you on fire or making you want to do more. So I just want to talk briefly about the characters you created in this book. Let's talk about the two friends. I like their dynamic. I like how we see that they are different people. And that's something I always try to do when I'm creating characters, when I'm writing, be it for film or be it in a story. It's important to, because sometimes you see certain characters and they're practically the same. But we know in real life, no two people are the same. Even you and your siblings, you can't be the same. So I like that we saw that Pamela had a different, distinct character from Iberia, and both of them could like just be in sync. And also for the guys. So when you are creating the character, can you just walk us through your process? What did you want for each of them?
When I was working through the character, so first of all, characterization is a very, very, very important part of my writing process. I think it takes the longest period of time. I could be working on my characters for, say, 6 months if we're not careful. It's that intense for me. It's that serious for me. So I have a character template document that I use. So it's, I won't call it a criminal profile because I think it's more intimate than that. It's deeper than that. So each character, especially the main ones, but not only the main ones, even other ones who are important in a way, they have a document. And in this document, I get to see who they are, like differently, just like different from the story, like the backstory, how, where were you born, how is their family like? Like it's basically just sitting with somebody, knowing how they grew up, knowing how they've come to this point, knowing why they behave, they do. Basically, just sitting, just the way you're having this conversation with me and wanting to know why crime and all of that. So I'm able to mentally sit with these characters and ask them questions. How, of course, it's my imagination responding back, but you get the gist. So I ask them these questions. I talk to them. I mean, sometimes it's so bad that people around me wonder if I'm okay. So I talk to them and I ask questions and I'm writing down like things that I feel inspired this character. So at the end of the day, when I'm done with the whole, it's a very, very time intensive process. I think a particular document contains about 11 to 15 pages. I can't really say right now. So having to answer every question, by the time I am done with a single character, it feels like I know that character personally. It feels like I have met that character. It feels like the person really exists, even though it's just a figment of my imagination. So by the time I have done this with, let's say, five, six, whatever main characters I have for that book, then I sit on my own and try to like see these characters and how they would be together. If you have this kind of home training, this kind of background, if you're this kind of person, if two of you are in the same situation, how would you react and all of that? Or imagine all of us sitting at the table, everybody from their different backgrounds and all saying things that they would ideally say and how they would probably have issues, quarrels, and all of that. So before I eventually start writing, the characters feel so real. I have known them for a while. So when I'm writing, it's so easy to tell what character A would do and what character B would do and how character C would react. And of course, there are the exceptions where when you're writing, your characters decide to take you, the writer, by surprise. So that's basically how characterization works for me.
That's a lot of work, cool. Like faith. Is your process close to this?
It
Because I mean, I really admire it, and I'm like, I wish I actually do that. Like, that's really beautiful, the fact that you take your time. So I think the only time I've actually done this for characters is because I am recently taking up screenwriting, not very recently, but more practical now. And I think because for film, there's a lot that you don't get to show on screen, because with book, you know, you have the levity of time to build. But this is really beautiful, because even though in books, you get time to build your characters that the people even see, you take your time to still build these backstories. And our last guest talked about this too, Nikki Campbell. She talks about the fact that she had to build backstories for each of her characters. And that's really, really impressive. Like, and you said one document is like 15 pages. So that's a lot of work before you do your actual writing. When people pick up the book, they are like, they don't know that so much has gone behind the scenes in creating Pamela and Ibiri. That's very beautiful. Yeah. Well done, Miracle.
Thank you. Speaking of when people pick up the book, I remember there was a time I had a public outcry on my Instagram story where I asked everybody, how long did you take it? And people were telling me 5 hours. I'm like, do you know what I did with that book? You're reading it in 5 hours.
Yes.
You're cooking. You cook.
I told them nobody should respond again. I didn't want to hear. I just don't want to read 3 hours. I don't understand. 3 hours, why?
but that's literally what you cooked for them. So you did all the cooking. You know how people say the ROI on cooking is not here. Like, you cook for hours and then somebody in 10 minutes.
So
you basically gave them a good dish. Yeah, and they ate it all up. Oh, well done.
Thank you.
Miracle, so you talked about how you first started writing this book when you were 15. Does that mean that are you a fan of crime thrillers? Were you watching or consuming a lot of crime series or books?
Okay. Yes, I was, but not at the beginning. Now, I would say, let me not say like every Nigerian child, like the average Nigerian child, I was exposed to Nollywood, Telemundo. It was Telemundo then. Then I think then we had AIT, where they used to show telenovelas, Catalina and Sebastian. So a lot of those things. So those are the only things I was exposed to, romance stories in quotes. And so they influenced my writing. I didn't know there was any other thing that existed. I mean, I remember I had probably watched Commando, Rambo, but I didn't understand what was going on. I was just watching fighting scenes with the big people in the house. So these are the things I understood. Seeing a guy and a girl who like each other, and then they are enemies to lovers and all of that. So these were the only things I knew, and those were the only things I wrote. Then fast forward to when I was 14 in, I think, SS2. So now, remember, I liked only romance books. I loved only sweet books because that was the only thing I thought existed. And there was this particular book I was looking for in the library. It was called Timeless Love. So my classmate was reading it, and I told her, when you're done, I want to read it. So there's a way we do in school then. If we want a book, when we're putting it back in the shelf, we don't put it the normal way because we feel the title might get someone else's interest. And then when we come, we won't see it. So we just turn it and nobody knows the book. So I told her to do that. So we just turn it. So people just see the leaves, but they don't see the spine that has the title of the book.
Yeah.
So I came and she showed me where she hid it. So the next day, second book, I came with so intentional about reading Timeless Love that transcends time. And I didn't find the book. I spent the entire break period looking for that book. Even the librarian had to help me out. We had to move around the library to see the student that was reading it. There was no student with that book. The book just vanished. And so she said, okay, a new stock just came into the library. I should check if I would find the book in there. I checked, I didn't find it. And then I saw a book by R.L. Stine. I think it was called The Betrayal. I had never heard of him. Okay, I had remembered seeing a book by him, The Babysitter. And I remembered it was quite mysterious. I was like, okay, I've read this book before. Let me see what he can write since I can't find my Timeless Love. And so I started reading it. And I was amazed. I was amazed at how, at face value, you could see somebody as person A. But really, what that person has in mind is like a whole lot of, like, something totally different from what he or she is expressing. And it was mind-blowing, honestly. I couldn't believe that, wow, this can actually be expressed in books. Like, someone would actually claim to this, and the person actually is doing that. That is probably the person who is even attacking you. Now, I'm not even talking about the Nigerian movies where the uncle will pretend to be nice. When the father dies, he will come and, you know, it was this felt so, it felt so deceptive. Like, how somebody would be smiling at you and then they are killing you, or they are, like, it was just so great. And I was like, wow, I can write something like this. And I kept on consuming more and more of Ariel. I think throughout my SS2 to SS3, I kept on reading only Ariel Stein. I kept on reading. And so every single, and at the point, I even started looking at my classmates like, only God knows what you're thinking in your mind. I'm very sure you don't like me. And all of that. So eventually, I began to notice it reflected in my, because at the point I got bored of romance stories. If I'm like, I know what will happen in the ending. I know two of them will get together. Please give me something that will make me work my mind, something that I will be shocked at the end and all of that. So I began to write stories like that. I remember the first one I had written, it was already a romance story. And then I had consumed so much of Ariel Stein's books that I didn't even know when I turned the story around. And I remember my classmates who read it then were like, Miracle, what happened? What happened? And they were so confused. And they kept on, and I usually give them chapter by chapter. So they kept on asking me, who is doing this? Who is doing that? And at that point, I hadn't learned so much. So I didn't even know who was doing what. I just knew I was writing. My aim then was, write this story in a way nobody can tell the ending. That was my new writing goal as at that point. Yeah, so my goal whenever I was writing was, write this book in a way nobody can tell that this is the person doing this. Write this in a way nobody can tell. Like, and then at the point I began to learn about red herring, began to study more. So that was basically it. Ariel Stein really, really inspired me into creating these characters. And it wasn't just him. And this is a story I love to share. It was also my cousin, my elder cousin. Now, remember I told you I write like romance, and I wouldn't even call it romance, but then small children romance stuff that I was writing then. So I remembered, my classmates always loved my stories. So my sister came home for, was it the holidays? Yeah, I think so. She came home and I had this new story I had written and I wanted her to read it because obviously I didn't think she had ever read any of my books. So I told her, sister, there's this book I have. I want you to read it. And she just looked at me and kept on pressing her phone. I thought she didn't hear me. So I walked over to her. I dropped the book beside her. I said, sister, read my story. Just with them, and then, and it was a hardcover notebook. And then my sister flung this book across the living room. I looked at her. I looked at my book on the floor. And then she was like, I beg, carry this Nigerian movie story and go from here. Your story that they want to do from the end. I was like, I looked at her. I was very angry when she said that. Because, I mean, everybody in my class says, I am a good writer. My stories are interesting. Why would you throw my book? I wanted to cry, but I was more angry than hurt. And I told her, do you see this thing you did today? I will win writing awards and I will tell the whole world what you did to me. And she said, you will not win anything with this rubbish you're writing. I told her, don't worry. Mark this night. I will tell the whole world that you threw my book away. And trust me, I've been doing that.
And thing. You are telling the whole world right now.
Oh my God.
I even put her behind the acknowledgement. I told her, you will not hear. This thing you did to me, everybody will know. But truly, that was actually what lit the fire. And so when I read that first Ariel Stein novel, and I saw that, okay, and Shebi sister told me my book, they will know it from beginning to end. Oh yeah, let me start. Let me see who will know. And like, it was just basically challenging myself and challenging my sister, because I was like, how dare you? And that's how I've been able to come to this point of writing mysteries and all of that.
Ah! Oh my God, I can just imagine that scene, especially in an Igbo household. Oh my God. I can't imagine it.
Man, it would have been a lot of drama. I'm really glad that was also kind of like a push for you. So even though at the time you knew you were a good writer, but you didn't just let it become, oh, she thinks that I'm writing Nigerian stories and at the end of the day, anybody can predict what my story is, just basic. It made you say, oh, I can do more than basic. And here we are today. So I think that's something people need to pay attention to. So it could come from anybody. It could be family. It could be friends. And they mean no harm, because clearly your sister meant no harm. It's just a thing of, oh, and all these people's story that is the same thing we always hear from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
People will come with, you know, those kind of criticisms. And some people will just say, okay, maybe I'm not good enough. And that's it. And others will pick up from there and say, I can show this person, and even if it's not about the person, I can show myself that I'm actually good enough. And what this person said, it means nothing. Rather, I would basically do the opposite of it. So that's one lesson to take from what happened. And the Miracle sister, Miracle is here spreading your deadliness to everybody.
Shout out to you.
Oh my.
So let's talk about your journey to publishing. Yes. I would say that you are a relatively fresh face in the Nigerian writing space, and you've been doing, I hope I'm correct to say that, and you've been doing very well since your debut. So what would you say is the one thing that has, you know, stuck with you, or one thing you hold on to, or that you have realized since you got published?
One thing that I've realized, I would say it's basically staying focusing, actually focusing and staying true to who you are, staying true to what drove you to do what you're doing in the first place. So I think that's really one thing that keeps sticking with me every day. And a mantra that I love to share with everybody who cares to listen, always, always, always put yourself out there. The least / the worst you will get is a no. And no has not killed anybody, literally. Like, nobody has ever seen someone that they told no and the person fell down and died immediately. The no did not stab you with a knife or anything. So it was something I got to learn. And especially because of the kind of books I write, kind of stories I write, seeing that it's not something that is really, really rampant in the Nigerian space. So I had to deal with a lot of that, and being able to push through, being able to keep at what I knew felt original to me. Trust me, there were times I wanted to stop writing mysteries. There were times I wanted to stick with what was the norm, because it felt like I would never go anywhere with what I was writing. I tried it once and I felt so sad that I broke down and cried, because I couldn't write what I was struggling to write, because it just didn't feel okay to me. And seeing that at the end of the day, at the right time, everything paid off, and the right people found my book and were willing to work with me, and every other person out there right now, including the Writer's Talk podcast, are so interested in what I've written. So that's basically one thing I took away with getting published, like always putting yourself out there. It's last, no one will tell you. No, the hard parts like that.
Amazing. Yeah, so we are so interested in your work. So I'm happy that we got to do this with you. So Miracle, what should we be looking out for in the coming years from Miracle?
Okay. Let's say let's not use coming years. We could just use the next book. I don't want to look too far.
Okay.
So all right, let's say we're looking at another YA, another mystery novel. I think that's as much as I can say right now, but then I'm still looking to bring this concept of mystery writing home. I want to make sure it's something that the Nigerian young adults / African young adults are used to. I want it to be something that is common as well. So it's something I would keep doing. It's like being at the front of a revolution or something like that. So I know how important it is that younger children and all get to see these kinds of books existing. And I find myself in a position to create such books. So I would keep doing that for as long as I can.
Yay! So we're basically expecting more crime fiction, more thriller
books.
Yes,
we are.
More books that will be giving us goosebumps. So really, really, it's been interesting talking with you. Thank you for sitting with us.
Same here. Thank you very much, Miracle.
Thank you, Faith, for having me. Thank you, Foma, for having me.
So guys, you can find Miracle on social media at Miracle Emeka Nkwo on Instagram and on Twitter. We'll post a link to her social media handles in our description box. And please get this book, What Happened to Janet Uzo. It was published by Masobe Books and it is available everywhere that you buy books. Don't forget to share this episode to bookworms like yourselves and just fans of crime thrillers and fiction. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye. Thank you so much, Miracle. Bye.
Thank you for listening to us. Please remember to subscribe and follow us on our social media handles. Details are in the description box.